East Cobb Church. Thank you. It is so good to be with you all. Like Jamie said, my name is Dane, and I get to work in our student ministries. And parents of middle school and high school students in the room, I just want to tell you this every chance I get. Thank you so much for letting our team get to be a part of your students' journey. It is our staff's and our team's joy to get to watch them join in on this community we're trying to create here at East Cobb Church. So thank you for trusting us with them. I love what I get to do. And if we don't know each other, or it's just been a while, quick catch up on me. So past year of life, I've been learning a lot about myself, specifically around the word control. Now, I don't know the last time you've really felt out of control, but the amount of times I have felt in control has absolutely plummeted since me and my wife, Emmy, had this little girl right here. This is Lucy. She's 10 months old. I am her dada. And I throw this picture up because she is adorable and it's an automatic aw. But also, I'm going to talk a lot about her today and how she has influenced my own perception of my control and specifically my self-control, because parents in the room know this. The amount you feel in control starts to wane a little bit when you have a child. Never before was this more clear than on a five-hour flight back from California when Lucy was 5 months old. Some of you already know where this is going. On the way there, she was an absolute angel. She was perfect. Like, the guy next to me thanked me. I was like, sure, I mean, I tried my best. But she was perfect. And we got cocky, and we paid for it on the way back. Here's what that means. On the way back, we were descending down into Atlanta. We had about, like, 45 minutes left in the flight. And we started to hit some chop. I mean, we were hitting a pretty bad storm. And right at that moment, of course, Lucy starts to cry. Right when the seatbelt lights are going on. Lucy starts to cry, and so we go down our little checklist. We're like, well, she ate. Well, she just slept 3 hours. She burped. Can only be one thing. It's all right. We'll change her when we land. We'll be fine. But then, and I won't go into detail. I'll just let your imagination do the work. I'll just say the word blowout. And whatever you're imagining, yes, it was that. And this happens right as the plane is like hitting turbulence. I mean, it's going up and down. The stewardesses are in the back like buckling in. This is no joke. We were getting ready to hit some chop. And right then, I'm like, all right, game time decision. Emmy, give the baby to me. Super dad comes to the rescue. I tuck her like a football, and now I'm Christian McCaffrey. And so I start going down the aisle. I'm clawing my way down. People are looking at me like I'm a total idiot. They're like, no. And I run into the bathroom. The stewardess right at that moment goes, wrong one. It's too late. I go into the bathroom. I rip the front side off of the paper towel dispenser. It's enough room to do my work. I get Lucy on there. We start doing our thing. The passy falls in the toilet. Necessary casualty. I keep going. We finish it. I claw my way back to the seat, sit down. Me and Lucy have some shared trauma. And I just sat and thought about how little control I have. The more I learn how to be a dad, the more control I realize I don't have. And this last year has been amazing. This has been my favorite year of my life so far. But I also look back and I feel like my knuckles have been white for like a year straight, because it starts off as a dad with the most out of control experience of your life. Mom's in the room. This is even more the case for you. But as a dad, here's what it was like for me. You're in an operating room with the person you love the most on the table, and they're going to let you watch the whole thing. It's like, when else does that happen? The goal of the procedure being to extract the other person you love the most out of the person you love the most. And the only thing they let me do was hold a leg. That's what I got to do. And it was like, that is my oasis of excellence. I'm going to be the greatest leg holder of all time. This is all I get to do, and I'm going to do it well. Later on, they let me do one other thing. They let me cut the cord, and you would have thought I was doing neurosurgery. I was just so precise. Those are the two things they let me do for the biggest moment of my entire life. Talk about out of control. And it didn't just end at the hospital. I mean, that's only the beginning. You get home, and you feel out of control of the baby's health. You feel out of control of your own schedule. You feel out of control of your sleep. And what I've started to learn is, hey, there's going to be certain things that I just don't need to sweat. Certain things are going to work themselves out. But then there are certain things, as a parent, as a dad, that do have to be in control. Whether I can control them or not, they have to be in control. Because in life, in general, there are things that can be out of control and things that absolutely cannot be out of control. You can be out of control at Golden Corral. You'll be fine after a day or two. But a plane can't be out of control, especially in my situation. You can be out of control with the snooze button on vacation. You'll be fine. But a train can't be out of control, or your brakes, or your bike, or your credit card. Those things can't be out of control. Your dog can be out of control for like a few seconds in the backyard, get the zoomies. But if your child is out of control in public, you would probably rather be on a plane than is out of control. All that being said, I believe the thing that demands the most control out of us, and perhaps I believe has the biggest consequences when we don't control it, is ourselves. That's what we're talking about today. Self-control, and why it is on the list of things that cannot be out of control. Now, when Jamie asked me to speak on self-control, I was a little bit disoriented, to be honest, because I had already picked that fruit of the Spirit for myself a month before I even knew we were doing this series. See, I was talking to a mentor about ministry earlier this year, and he brought up the fruits of the Spirit, and I was like, yeah, I need to go refresh on those fruits. I went back and read the passage, and immediately was like, this is what I need, more fruit in my life. I was feeling exhausted. And one fruit immediately leapt off the page to me, self-control. I was like, that's it. That's gonna be key for me this year. This needs to be my fruit of the year for 2024. And so that's what I picked for the year. I didn't tell anyone this because it sounded a little bit dorky. My fruit of the year for 2024 would be self-control. Fast forward a couple months and Jamie asked me to speak on it. It just felt like the kind of thing that couldn't be a coincidence. To get to dive deeper into something that God was already teaching me has been so, so cool. And all that to say, this is not something I'm great at. This is something I'm actively trying to get better at. But to kind of dive into scripture and see what the Bible has to say about self-control has been so cool for me, and I'm really excited to get to talk about it. So, like Jamie said, we're in part 9 of our series, What the World Needs Now. And at this point, it feels like we might as well just start back from the beginning again because we've been in it for like a year. But on a serious note, this has been so inspiring, so helpful for me, because there's something really, really tangible and measurable about seeing this list of words right here and just kind of seeing where you need work. It's like a checklist. And if you're not familiar, this list of words is called the Fruits of the Spirit. It comes from a letter that Paul wrote to the church in Galatia in the first century, kind of keying them in on what life should start to look like for you when you follow Jesus. This is the fruit of following Jesus. And we've been breaking down one of these words each week and in 9 parts. And I'm so glad we took 9 weeks to actually unpack all of these words. Each of them could be their own whole series. And we've been talking about how the thing with the fruits of the Spirit is that they're not produced by us, they're produced through us. And what the world needs more now of is more of all this fruit. That as we start to follow Jesus, we experience more of this fruit in our life. Not just more spiritual. That's not what we get when we follow Jesus. Not to become more spiritual, become more mature. To become mature like Christ was mature. And what does Christ-like maturity look like? Well, this list of words right here. These fruits are produced through us, not by us. We can't create these fruits by ourselves, but the Holy Spirit, the part of God that works in our hearts and minds, is the only thing that can create more of these in our life. And so as we follow Jesus, all of these things start to become more and more true of us. These are the adjectives that start to define us. And so a couple weeks ago, Andy Stanley, our senior pastor, unpacked Romans chapter 7. Again, a letter that Paul wrote to the church in Rome in the first century. And I'm not gonna rehash the whole chapter, but I do wanna hit some of the highlights because I think it is crucial in any conversation about self-control. And Paul, by the way, if you're not familiar, being the leader who spearheaded the spread of the church outside of Judea and Galilee in the first century and out into the greater Roman Empire. He's who wrote this letter. And this is his own personal confession to his lack of self-control. It's honestly pretty frustrating to read. Almost as frustrating as how much I relate to it when I read it. He distills the whole battle for self-control into this thing that we can't always win. Here's what he says. I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, I do. Pretty self-explanatory. Paul's saying this is a battle. The battle for self-control is one that I don't always win, is what he's saying. Keep going. A few verses later, he continues to unpack this idea. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. I think there's a little humor built into this on purpose. But for me, it kind of feels like when you listen to a friend like verbally process a problem and you have no solution. And you're just like, yes, correct. This is not a solution. he's giving us. This is more of just a predicament. And lastly, a few more verses later, this is the one I kind of want to stay on for a second. For in my inner being, I delight in God's law. But I see another law at work in me, waging war, such strong language, against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin at work within me. So Paul didn't just struggle with self-control. He didn't always have it. He didn't always have self-control. I mean, Jesus struggled with self-control. He was tempted. He didn't ever give in. But Paul's saying, I struggle with self-control and sometimes I do give in. And this is crazy. This is wild because we're talking about Paul, who, if you're not familiar, I mean, he risked his life every day to spread Christianity across the Roman Empire. And he got shipwrecked, stoned, snake bitten. He ended up getting killed for his faith. Paul, with all his discipline, with all his grit, tenacity, could not always control himself. And this is our story too. That it's not just a self-control struggle we have. It's a lack of self-control that we can have. That maybe we control ourselves most of the time, 95% of the time, a whole lot of the time, but there's times when we don't. This is our struggle we feel. And Paul describes himself as a prisoner. And I don't think this is dramatic language to say, like, I am like a prisoner wearing these. I want to have freedom. I don't want to struggle with these things I'm struggling with. I know I shouldn't do them, but here I am struggling with them. And he's saying he's a prisoner. Basically, he's in handcuffs to his own brokenness, to what he calls the law of sin. The sin, the brokenness that we've all inherited, that we all deal with, all struggle with, that's what's putting him in these. Again, this is not a solution. This is really just a predicament. He's saying we do what we told ourselves we wouldn't. This is our experience. I mean, we say, hey, that hurts me. That's not what's best for me. That's not what's best for them. That's not what's best for the people around me. That limits me. Like, that thing limits me as a husband, as a father, as a parent, as a mom. That thing limits me. And we're adults, and so we know we shouldn't do it. And so we say we're not. And then there we are doing it again. Because we're wearing these. Because Paul's saying our own brokenness is putting these on us. And what happens practically is our own brokenness ends up leading us to struggle with self-control in one of these three areas right here. Actions, anxieties, and appetites. First, actions. This is our outward way of life. This is our thoughts. This is our outward way of life. This is our walk. Our walk, the way we live. Most often, this looks like how we treat people. The way we treat others, saying that, hey, I'm going to be kinder, I'm going to be gentler. But then saying that dig, saying that abrasive comment when we said we wouldn't. We do what we say we wouldn't. This looks like, you know, saying I'm not going to gossip, talk about that person behind their back anymore. I'm going to not do that, and then there we are doing it again. This looks like saying we're going to listen better to our spouse. This is a big one for me. But then they say that thing, and you're just like, bah! It's like a lack of self-control. This is also actions. It also is our lifestyle, the way we live our life, how much we maybe exercise and stay on top of our health. If we're getting up early and having those daily habits we want, controlling the alarm clock, not pressing the snooze button and remixing that alarm sound to a rap beat in our dreams so we can keep on dreaming and sleeping, we start to wear these. We say we're going to control our actions, and then we can't always do it. The second category, anxieties. This is the one that made me pick this fruit of self-control for me for 2024. This is what I've struggled with the most. And because in this last year of Emmy's late pregnancy, Lucy's birth, and then the next 10 months, I started to realize, hey, I am really trying to hyper-control and white-knuckle the things I feel like are under my control. Like when we got home from the hospital over the next 2 weeks, I built 2 1,000-piece puzzles and I cleaned the entire house twice. Like red flag right there. But also serious things too. Like our finances, like my family's health, like things I'm in charge of at work, starting to really hold on tight to the things I felt like I can control. But here's the ironic thing that happened to me. The more I tried to control, the less self-control I had. I lacked self-control with my anxieties, and more than ever before in my life. When there was something coming up, a difficult decision or conversation in my personal life, at work, I would just fixate. I would obsess. And still I'm struggling with this to an extent. Every moment of margin, like going to sleep, waking up, when my mind would drift, starting to really fixate, obsess over things that I didn't need to. I mean, it was like I was wearing these. I just lacked self-control. It was like, hey, Dane, relax, compartmentalize. But it felt a little helpless. It felt like I just lacked self-control. For some of you, that second one rings true. Anxieties, your thought patterns, what's happening mentally with you is something you were struggling with to control. And lastly, appetites. Now, appetites is really like a mix of the first two, but I think it deserves its own category because this is usually the first one we think of when we think of a lack of self-control. The most extreme versions of a lack of self-control happen in this. I mean, this is where addictions are born and thrive. Things like lust, food, alcohol, a drug, these are appetites. And they're appetites because the way an appetite works is the more you feed it, the more it grows. And so our self-control decreases as the appetite grows. Some extreme cases of this happen. And you know, this looks like practically, you know, an after-work drink to relax turns into a daily thing, turns into two a day, turns into three a day, and all of a sudden it's a dependency. It's wearing these. It's lacking self-control. You're not even really making the decision anymore. The appetite is. Pornography creeps into our life, maybe a mistake here and there at first, but then all of a sudden it's the constant escape that starts to become our master, that makes us a prisoner. Maybe it's not even that. Maybe it's just like screen time. I think that's an appetite. Scrolling, streaming, saying we're gonna cut down on our screen time, but then it's like we're pulling up the screen before we even make the decision to. We're starting to lack self-control. We're not doing what we said we would. And so all these things, all these categories, as we wear these, as we start to experience a lack of control in these areas, I think we all realize there's some pretty big consequences, right? It's dangerous, it's scary, it's harmful, but maybe even more than that, all the fruit we've been talking about for the last 2 months starts to disappear from our life when we lack self-control. There is something about that last fruit of the Spirit right there that influences the other eight. That when we lack this one, we're in danger of losing all these things that we so desperately want to be true of us. We're in danger of fruit robbery. That we make these short-term decisions that threaten our long-term hopes and dreams, the long-term things we want to be true of us. Our actions toward others starts to steal our gentleness and kindness. Our anxieties start to steal our peace. Our appetite starts to steal our joy. And the result of all this being that what we want in life becomes out of our control when we lack self-control. And I know this isn't like a super encouraging thought. This is a tough thing to deal with. But remember, again, Paul, with all his tenacity, grit, discipline, who had more drive than we can even process, he struggled with this too. So this is part of not only the Christian experience, but this is part of the human experience. It's not just that we struggle with self-control. It's not just how do you self-control. It's what do we do about our lack of self-control? Which seems like something maybe we should just accept and move on. But what if we're fighting the wrong battle? What if the battle we're fighting itself is the problem? What if we need to change the battle? What if we need to flip the script and change the tide? What if there's a way to take the offense? What if we don't have to wear these? What if that strategy of just trying through discipline, through grit, through all the things we've been trying, what if that strategy is actually a losing battle? What if that's the wrong battle to fight? It didn't work for Paul, and it's not working for us either all the time. What if there's a better battle to fight that actually gives us a chance to make this problem more manageable? A better battle, a better fight. And the good news is, there is. And this is so encouraging, because the thing for me is I don't want self-control to limit the person I am. I don't want my self-control to limit all those fruits that I want out of my life. I don't want my self-control to limit the husband, the dad I should be. And the good news is there is a better battle to fight. We can find it from the same author who just wrote about his lack of self-control. Paul, in a different letter, talks about a better battle to fight. One that turns it into a winning battle. It's not just about discipline. It's way more helpful. It's way better than that. It's a winning battle that we can all do, that we can all join in on and change the battle. So that's what I want to talk about for the rest of our time today, a better battle to fight. And so, in a different letter, this time addressing the church in Corinth in the first century, Paul writes this. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of this world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. So This verse is kind of the context verse before we get to the next one that we're really going to spend our time with. But Paul's about to provide a weapon. You can go back. Paul's about to provide a weapon. And it's a weapon that he says has divine power. This is a weapon that gets God involved. This is a weapon that gets God on the battlefield. And for me, that sounds really good because I feel like I need all the help I can get. It's going to get God involved. This weapon is going to change the battle for us. Look what he says next. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God and take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. So this first part, arguments and every pretension, this was originally written in Greek. And when you go back to the Greek, what this really means is just ways of thinking, mental barriers. And so we could take this idea of taking ways of thinking, mental barriers that go against God and taking them captive, that idea, and we can apply this directly to our battle for self-control. And here's why. And it's not just because self-control is about only thoughts. It's not just that second category, anxieties. Self-control is about our actions, anxieties, and appetites. And taking thoughts captive applies to our actions, anxieties, and appetites because the battle for self-control happens in the mind. The mind is the battlefield. Something has to change with us mentally if we're going to have more self-control over our actions, anxieties, and appetites. And here's how we know this, because look at how Merriam-Webster defines self-control. Restraint exercised over one's own impulses, emotions, or desires. And impulses, emotions, and desires all happen in the mind. The mind's the battlefield. What this is saying is something goes into our mind, an impulse to do that thing that we know is wrong, to do that thing we said we wouldn't do. And then we have a choice. Restrain it. Don't restrain it. Control it. Don't control it. And so this impulse enters our brain and we have a choice. That's how we need to start understanding self-control. And this idea of it happening in the mind, this is also supported academically. The National Library of Medicine wrote an article called The Science and Practice of Self-Control. It's really good. And in it, the authors write this right here. Self-control enables us to navigate conflicts between any of our goals and innumerable hourly temptations. This is so helpful. I love this. They're talking about the scale that self-control happens on. And it's saying that self-control isn't like big picture hopes and dreams. That's the kind of thing that Paul did not struggle with. He was very driven. A lot of people in this room are very driven. It's happening on the small scale. It's the little decisions. It's the hourly temptations. That's the academic language they chose, temptations. And it's a conflict. Right on theme with Paul's theme of the battle of the war for self-control. It's a conflict between our goals and hourly temptations, what we want out of life, who we want to be, how we want to live, and hourly impulses, decisions, and temptations that want to undo that. The fruit that we want, how we want to be, versus those little moments of self-control that we need to exercise. So with all that being said, here's what we need to do. Here's how we need to understand self-control. We need to prevent an impulse from becoming a behavior. If the battle happens in the mind, something has to happen in that space between an impulse and a behavior. Something has to happen. That's where self-control lives, between the impulse and the behavior. That's self-control. And we know this. We know that this is true because behaviors don't just happen. We don't just wonder, hey, how did I end up gossiping about that person again? How did I end up on that website again? How did I end up at this bar with three empty glasses in front of me? Well, a behavior was allowed to turn, or an impulse was allowed to turn into a behavior. We gave the impulse the green light. We gave it permission. Hurtful impulses, addictive ones, bad habits, things that hurt others, things that we all do and all struggle with, we gave the impulse the green light. So with that understanding of self-control, let's go back to the verse and look at what Paul says. What do we need to do in that space between the impulse and the behavior? We need to take the thought captive. This is what Paul's saying, that these thoughts are unwanted. These impulses to do that thing, to say that thing are unwanted. They are uncaptive, and we need to take them captive. The original Greek really reads to lead away captive. And I love that because there's some work we have to do. You don't just delete an impulse. There's some work in between, that space between the impulse and the behavior where we have to lead it away. And so Paul changes the entire paradigm for us. This is huge. Look what he's saying, that we need to go from taking captive to taking captives. He's saying stop fighting the losing battle. He's saying just relying on discipline, grit, it has not worked for us. There is a better battle to fight. There is a way to flip the script, to change the tide. It's taking thoughts captive. That's how we turn into a winning battle that's manageable, that we can win, that we don't feel like we're losing. That's a better battle to fight. We can't always control ourselves, but we can control what controls us. He's saying you can control what controls you. That's the better battle to fight than just relying on discipline or grit. Take the offense. Get ahead of it. That's what he's saying. And the cool part is the very last part of the verse is the how. The how we do this. And it's not discipline. It's not grit. And if it were that easy, I mean, I feel like we need to say this. If it were that easy, we would have already done it. And there's people in this room who've raised kids, who've owned houses, who've had great careers, who've gotten through school. If it was discipline or grit, we wouldn't struggle with self-control so much. We need some outside help. And the coolest part is the very last part of the verse is the most helpful. And this idea of taking thoughts captive, it's thrown around so often in Christian circles, but it's taken out of context if that's all you say. Because the part right after it's the even more helpful part that we can't forget because we need some outside help. Look again at what Paul said. Take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ, not obedient to ourselves. This is huge. It's who we take it to that makes all the difference. He's saying we need to take every thought and make it obedient to Christ. Paul's saying, hey, I don't need to be my own master of my own thoughts. I can't always control myself. I need a better master, a better person to make my thoughts obedient to, because he can be the person who helps me go from taking captive to taking captives. He's saying, one more time, changing the paradigm again. We need to go from taking captive to taking captives to Christ. It's who we take them to that makes all the difference. It's not just about taking impulses captive. It's who we take them to. Again, leading thoughts away captive to Christ. Such a beautiful picture Paul paints. Making Jesus the master of our thoughts. Making him the person our thoughts are obedient to. And not just ourselves. It's not just discipline or grit. And what if this idea of making our thoughts obedient to Christ instead of us, to making them obedient to Jesus instead of us, what if that's the key? What if that's the key that changes the whole battle? That we've been fighting this battle of just discipline, but we need to fight a different battle of taking captive thoughts to Christ, taking these captives, these impulses that we don't want to act on to Christ. What if that's the key? What if that's the key that allows us to go from being taken captive to taking captives of our thoughts, from being a prisoner to taking unwanted impulses prisoner instead? And I hear something like that, and I'm like, hey, that's great in theory. But like, what do I do? What does it look like practically in the heat of the moment when the temptation comes to do that thing, to say that thing, to gossip, to go to that website, to open another bottle? What do you do in that moment of temptation? Well, I want to spend the rest of our time today talking about two practical strategies to control what controls you. Two practical strategies to make our thoughts obedient to Christ. And the first one happens not even in the moment. The first one happens way before the moment. Because we've talked about in the moment, we don't always have control. So we need to back it up and we need to seize control while we have it. We need to systemize, cement control while we have it before the heat of the moment by making some pre-decisions. Pre-decisions, like if you haven't trained for a marathon and after this message, you decide you're gonna run from here to Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, you're not gonna make it. There were no pre-decisions. We need to make some pre-decisions. Practically, what that looks like. This is a way to control what controls us. Practically, what that looks like for me, for example, has been a daily, consistent, quiet time with God. Talking about these intrusive thoughts I've dealt with, I mean, that is something I can control. I can't always control the things that pop into my mind, but I can control how often I spend time with God. And when I've spent time with God, man, I tell you what, those intrusive thoughts have been less and less and less. That has been a key for me. That is something that is within my control, that I can always control. That is a pre-decision. Maybe it's not that for you. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's just a different schedule. An alarm clock can be a key for you. If you're struggling with habits, with exercise, maybe just saying, hey, I'm going to back it up just 30 more minutes in my morning to get up and have that time. An alarm clock can be a key for you. That's a pre-decision. That's controlling what controls you. Maybe it's not that. Maybe it's boundaries. That's a pre-decision, guardrails and boundaries. You know what we teach our high schoolers? We tell them, you don't make boundaries with your boyfriend or girlfriend when you're in the basement Netflix and chilling. That's not when you make the boundaries. You make them way before the date. You make them way before the date ever happens. That's when you can make some good boundaries and decisions. Control what controls you by making some pre-decisions. That could be a key for some people. Boundaries, guardrails. If you struggle with time management, you're always running late or you're struggling to prioritize family, maybe just getting ahead of your calendar. A calendar can be a key for you. Saying, hey, I'm going to get ahead a couple weeks before and I'm going to have it down what I'm doing during the day so I can prioritize people better. Maybe it's not that. Maybe for some of you, a good pre-decision is just taking some time off of social media. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but like, if you're in the boat of, hey, it's not like porn that you're seeing on there, but it's like the gateway to the thing that leads you to where you don't want to go online. A pre-decision you can make before the moment is I'm just going to take some time off social media. That could be a key for you. Or maybe it's not that. Maybe it's the thoughts you have after you get off social media, the unwanted thoughts, the anxieties, the insecurities. A way to control what controls you is take a break of that. Maybe some people need to take a year off social media. That's controlling what controls you. That could be a key for you. Pre-decisions. They apply to family, to finances, to food, to sex, to everything, to health. This is how we start to control what controls us. And if you're in the room and you're not a Christian, you can just apply that part. I think that's just like a truth that is just practical and always helps. But if you are a Christian, those pre-decisions, that's what it practically looks like to make our thoughts obedient to Christ. Because when we start to dedicate our small habits, our daily rhythms, our little decisions, dedicating our pre-decisions to the way of life of Jesus, when we start to involve him in that level of detail, that is making our thoughts obedient to Christ. That's going to produce more fruit in our life. And so that's the first one, making some pre-decisions. That's a way to control what controls you. And then the second one, honestly, I think this ends up and has to be the key as well. It's handing over control of our self-control. Handing over control of our self-control. Here's what I mean by this. What we've been talking about for months now is that the fruits of the Spirit are not produced by us. They're produced through us. And at the end of the day, we can't just magically create more self-control all by ourselves. It's a fruit of the Spirit, not a fruit of self-discipline. And so what this part looks like is daily asking God for more self-control for me. In your personal quiet time with God, asking him for more self-control. He wants to create this in you. He wants to produce this in you. This is a prayer he will always answer. And so for me, I have practiced daily asking for more self-control because I want more fruit of self-control in my life. And I can't produce it on my own. I need his help. I've tried to hand over control of my self-control. And that's another way to control what controls us. And as we think about this, controlling what controls us, it's not easy. Making these pre-decisions, handing over control of our self-control, it's not easy, but it is so worth it. Because remember, these fruits that we've been talking about for the last 2 months, these are in danger of disappearing when we lack that last fruit of the Spirit right there. There is something different about that fruit that has an effect on the other eight. And when we lack this fruit, we are in danger of losing the things we desperately want to be true about us, the things we desperately want to experience in this life. But on the flip side, here's the really good news. On the flip side, when we do get this one right, God starts to turn up the volume on the other eight. When we do get this one right, the sky is the limit. When all these things start to be true of us in our life, imagine what life looks like at that point. When you turn the volume up on all nine of these things that we've been talking about for months, imagine what life looks like. That's what the world needs. That's what we need. And so it's not easy, but it's worth it. Let's control what controls us. Let's make some pre-decisions. Let's hand over control of our self-control, ultimately, all with the goal of making our thoughts obedient to Christ. Let me pray for us. God, thank you that you want us to make our thoughts obedient to you, that it's not all on us. I've tried relying on discipline and grit. Even Paul tried that, and it just didn't work at the end of the day. But you say, hey, I'm the kind of good father that I want you to hand things like that over to me. So thank you that you have that kind of posture toward us. That you want that. That you want to help us. That you want to produce more of all nine of these fruits of the Spirit that we've been talking about. That you want us to experience the fullness of life. Life and life to the full like your son Jesus promised. That's what we want. So help us get this right. Help us control what controls us. And we ask you ultimately, as the only authority over these things, as the only one who can produce more of these things, to produce more self-control in our lives. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.